Hello, and welcome to the Comic Book Page Podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Retall. We're talking to Jason Brubaker, who is the creator, the writer, and artist for the wonderful web series Remind, that is also a couple of, or it is currently a hardcover volume one that he funded through Kickstarter, and soon to be a hardcover volume two, completing the epic tale. Thanks for joining me, Jason.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's fun to be here.
Let's talk about the high-level view of Remind and the world that we're experiencing.
Okay. Well, it's let's see. How do I pitch it at conventions? It's a mystical sci-fi about faith, lizard men, and brain transplantation. In a nutshell, it's about an underwater lizard civilization that has exiled a lizard, transplanted his brain into a cat's body, and so he could never come back. And it's his journey to try to get his body back and reclaim some of his life and figure out what happened to him. So that's the story in a nutshell. And it's just all the different amazing stories that I read and wanted to see mixed together, mashed into one. And, I pulled from inspiration from everything from John Carter books. It had a lot of brain transplantation in one specific book. And that was a huge inspiration for how this all started way back in the day. So anyway, that's it.
I saw the cover to that paperback on one of your page a day or a couple of pages a week, rather.
That's right. I blog. I posted that.
You know, and everyone can check out, and I'll have a link to the website in the show notes for this episode, but you can go online to remindblog.com and you can read all of volume one, and you can read the first chapter and the first page of the second chapter of volume two online, and depending on when, probably the first couple of pages of volume two by the time you listen to this. And you have it out there, you're serializing this that people can read for free on the web, but then you decided, okay, I'm going to put this out there and I'm going to do a Kickstarter campaign so I can print a nice hardcover of volume one. So let's talk about how the Kickstarter process came up. Well, first of all, you won a Zurich grant for $5,000 for volume one, and that helped.
That helped a lot. Yeah. And actually that was kind of the main reason I decided to self-publish. Because before that, I mean, a lot of people, I don't think they know, I started this trying to just do a graphic novel, trying to get an agent, trying to get a big publisher. You know, I worked on it for like 3 years before I showed anybody, and just in trying to get into that world, I just realized nobody cares about what you have to offer until you've done something already. And so that's when I, in a way, I almost gave up and said, I'm going to put it online and see if anyone cares type thing. And so that's when I started posting it online. And that changed everything about the whole project completely. And I started getting, actual responses of people saying they liked it. An audience started growing, and I realized this is the best way to do it because I'm growing an audience before I actually put in 11 grand to print this thing. And so now looking back, I don't see how I could have done it any other way other than releasing it slowly online to build the momentum and the fan base. It was fans who suggested that I launch a Kickstarter. I'd never heard about a Kickstarter before. And this is back almost 2 years ago now when I launched the first one. So it was when Kickstarter was, I think, in its first year, and hardly anybody knew about it. No one really trusted that kind of idea of backing, crowdsourcing and given them something in return. So I had to do a lot of convincing at that time. And at that time, let's see, I'm losing my train of thought because I think you were talking about the Xeric grant. That's right. So with the Xeric grant, I decided, well, I'm going to do this. I'm going to submit it to this thing. And if I get this grant, then cool. I guess that means I should self-publish. If I don't, then maybe I need to completely change my strategy. And so I submitted it, and I won $5,000. And so that was kind of the game changer for me. And then immediately after that is when I launched my Kickstarter. I got $12,000 for it. And at the time, that was huge. Like, no, it seems like people were getting like $3,000 on average for a comic. That was a big deal at that time. So I had my goal at $3,000, and I got $12,000. And it kind of, it seems like it opened a lot of people's eyes. Like, wow, this is something that can really happen now. You know, you can really raise money with Kickstarter. I know it convinced me after seeing how much money was raised. And since then, it's that money that came in through Kickstarter and the Xeric grant has continually fed the process. You know, I'd spend the money on a publicist or on shows and conventions, and then more money would come in. And it's like since then, everything has just been money out of the business, you know, that was originally funded through Kickstarter. And I haven't had to put any of my own money into the project since. And, you know, I haven't made any money because it all goes back into the business. But because of that, it's just been perpetually growing. So it's really, really exciting.
Yeah, I love the Kickstarter. I've backed 18 projects so far. And every one that I've backed so far has funded.
That's great. Yeah.
You know, it just maybe I've got the magic touch, but probably not. I mean, it's just... You know, I see something that I like, and a lot of other people see that same thing, you know, and that's what I like about the way you did your Kickstarter, and a lot of the ones that I back are a similar way, is it's kind of a known quantity. I mean, you did a really smart thing. You have this project that's out there. People can see pages. Mm-hmm. So it's not just, you know, what is this? And you're also offering a tangible thing. You know, it's like, okay, if you back this for $25, you get this nice hardcover, which is, you know, what I would pay for that hardcover. Yeah. And I can see what I'm going to get. I know I'm going to get this hardcover. And I back it, you know, whereas some of them, I think that maybe don't do as well. They might, you know, have a little more of a, yeah, I'm going to do this. And, you know, that's a hard thing when the fans or the backers, they don't know what they're going to get out of a project, it's a little harder to make that leap of faith and go off and do that back on that project. So you were successful on your first one. You got 2,500 of the volumes printed. You know, you had all the backers got some, and then you had some left over. Some were sold via Amazon. You had some that you sold at conventions, and I wasn't aware of Kickstarter back when you did your original campaign, so I didn't see that campaign, but I did see you at WonderCon, and I was able to pick up a volume of the hardcover from you there. So then when I saw, you know, it was like, okay, and you kind of leave us off in the middle of the story, but, you know, you're continuing on. But that's the good thing is, you know, I can continue on the web, and, you know, I'm reading it, and I, you know, I'm up, you know, we're in chapter 5 now, you know, as, you know, it's July of 2012, and you're going to finish around October, I think you said.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm ready for it, and I'm reading it, and now I see the second Kickstarter, and it's like, let's talk about your second Kickstarter really quick, because I think that exceeded some of your expectations for the Kickstarter.
Well, what happened was I decided the first one was a $3,000 goal, and I was, and that's reasonable, I think, to ask. But this one time I asked for $24,000, and it's because I have to reprint the first volume as well as print the new volume, which is a thicker book. I don't have the Xeric grant this time, and I'm trying to do a slipcase for it as well. And that's not even included in the $24,000 price. I'm going to pay for that if I have to myself, or hopefully it'll go over. and pay for that. But what blew me away was the first day I raised more money this campaign than I did the whole like 40-day campaign on my first Kickstarter. And that just tells me how much the popularity of Kickstarter has grown, because I haven't done very much different. And I have about the same amount of traffic on my site as I did when I launched the first one, it seems like. So, you know, obviously I've been out there shopping the books around a lot more too. And I think people have something to compare it to, because I came through on the first one. So,
yeah,
you know, so, well, that helps.
You are 2 days in as we record this. You'll be probably about a week and a half in when people are listening to this recording, or a little later. And you're 75% funded right now. I'm looking at the Kickstarter page right now, and it's $18,000 even. Wow. Against the $24,000 goal. And that's in, less than 48 hours, I think.
Yeah,
so, you know, by the time you – there's no way you're not going to fund. You'll go past your $24,000.
Yeah.
So, but I would predict that by the time people are hearing this, it will be funded. And that means you can go out there. You know you're going to get it. You know, go out and order Volume 2. If you haven't seen Volume 1, you can get Volume 1 plus Volume 2.
Yeah.
You know, I would encourage anyone, go out and check out remindblog.com. And you can just go there and you can read, you know, the story so far. And, you know, if you fall in love with it like I did and like many other people have, then it's like, okay, I want these beautiful hardcovers to put on my shelf to go along with the, you know, as a tangible asset, because there are those of us who still like the paper.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I love having the hardcover. So it's really a nice addition to everything that we can have here.
Yeah.
And I do appreciate, I put a comment in on that first day saying, hey, I already have Volume 1. Can you add a gift level where I can get Volume 2 and a slipcase? And then you added that in, so that's the level that I'm backing it at. So I'll get my Volume 2 and a slipcase to put the 2 in.
That's perfect. Oh, great. Yeah, that was the biggest thing people asked for. And it's funny, this time around when I studied a lot of Kickstarter campaigns that were big, it seemed like the one thing that happened a lot was people tried to guess what people wanted, and they would put out a lot of different options, and then a couple of them would have, you know, two or three pledges, and the rest would get a ton of pledges. And so I figured this time around, since I can add pledge options to it, I figured I would just start with the bare bones, the bare minimum, and just see what kinds of things people want, what I start hearing over and over again. And so my plan is to continually add new tiers to this. And include other books, include prints, T-shirts, whatever it is that people seem to be wanting, and this, just let it grow from there. And obviously, I have stretch goals in mind, and a lot of things I want to, you know, add to people's packages when we hit a new goal and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, that'll be fun, and you know, I look forward to watching this over the course of the next month as more and more people discover it, because. You know, I really think you have 281 backers right now. You'll have a lot more by the time people hear this, and by the time it ends, you know, we're definitely going to be seeing Volume 2, and it's a great thing. Now, let's talk about your creative process for a while. You know,
okay.
I was reading on the blog about how you go from your pencils, and then you do you go directly to colors from your pencils. And also you're talking at some points about how you're experimenting with some brushwork and things like that. Let's talk about your creative process, how you're blocking out the story, how you go from, you know, your ideas to the actual finished product.
Okay. Well, to kind of understand how I developed my style, it all started when I've just been in a lot of different jobs as an artist, professionally. I've done storyboards, I've done animation, traditional animation, you know, digital work, design work, motion design. So I've had my hands in a lot of different forms of art. And before that, I just tried to get into comics. And so I just tried to do everything the way comic book artists taught new comic book artists how to make a comic. And, you know, where you get the Blue Line Pro and you block it all out and then you ink it and then you scan it and reduce it 60% or whatever it is. And so I did that at the start, you know, when I was younger. And then I got a career where I did storyboarding and learned all these different techniques. And so when I came back into trying to do comics, I started realizing there's a lot of different techniques that comic book artists don't use. And I was always scratching my head as to why they didn't try different approaches, because there's especially now with the computer, there's a lot of different ways you can go about things. So for instance, one of the things I learned in storyboarding was use tracing paper and these black Prismacolor pencils. That was kind of the best thing you could do with storyboards, because you could lay tracing paper over itself and refine it until you get what you want. Well, then later on, I started using ink pens with tracing paper for some reason. And so I developed this thing where I would use tracing paper with and not even sketch with a pencil, but with ink to figure out my layouts and stuff. And it was really fun, because you just lay down a big old thick line and you're not worrying about erasing or changing anything. And if you mess up, you just put another piece down and start over. And then in animation, there was, you know, there's the animation paper and flipping between cells, and we would draw everything with mechanical pencils and then scan that in and boost the contrast in Photoshop to create these nice thick blacks and stuff. And so I was like, well, I wonder why, you know, I couldn't just do the same thing with my inks in a comic, because my ink work has never been that solid. So I kind of took that together and started trying that and experimenting with that. And then the other challenge was color. And I worked at a lot of motion design studios, and they would just really figure out how to imitate any style out there. Like, you know, it's like, this is a great commercial over here. Figure out how to do this in our commercial with this style and this style mixed together, you know? And so a lot of times it was my job to figure out how to do that and do it repeatedly in animation so that it imitated a style. So I decided, well, I want to do a painterly style, kind of similar to Lynn Varley when she did Frank Miller's books back in the day, and just have something that feels really organic and feels really like real media. And so I kind of had a couple sample pictures in mind of what I really thought the essence of how the painting should look, and I just developed this style in Photoshop. With a couple, you know, swatches of paint textures that I painted. And so all of those things mixed together is how I ended up, you know, creating the assembly line that I use to make my books. And it's been really fun, because I think it's a kind of a unique style out there in comic book land right now. So I'm pretty proud of it. But and lately I've been experimenting with brushes again, and I don't know why I've been getting more confident with it. I don't know why I've been getting more confident with brushes, but I think I met with Doug Tenable once, and he showed me his brush. He's like, "You must use this. It's amazing." And so I bought one and tried it. And since then I've just really been enjoying it. And so I've been dabbling with it here and there, and I don't want to fully commit to it yet until I finish Remind and then move on to my next story. I'll probably develop a little different system for that, but that's the most of it.
Oh, very nice. So do you have an idea for your next story?
Yes, I have. I have several, and I'm still not 100% sure which one it will be, but and I don't want to talk about them
at
all.
That's fine. But I would love to see, if not an entire story, at least maybe a short, because Sonya is so fascinating to me. You know, she's very self-reliant. You know, she's got this whole history there where, you know, there's her father and she's, you know, can make all these really cool things. And then, you know, we spend a lot of time, in this story concentrating on Vittles, right?
Yeah.
And we kind of move away from Sonya to some extent.
Yeah.
It would be really fascinating to me to see more of Sonya's backstory and seeing her do some cool stuff at some point down the line.
Yeah, I agree. I don't have any plans to do a book three of Remind. It may be one of those things where when I'm, 80, I'll be like, I will break out Remind and start, working on volume three. But, I really tried to make the story self-contained so that, it ends, the arc is done. But there's definitely room to play with it if I want to venture out into another direction with it down the road. And one thing that I think I'm going to do, and I haven't talked about this at all online, but I really like the idea of using my characters that I've created, because it takes me forever to figure out a character and make him the way I like it. I've been thinking of reusing my characters in other stories, but it's like they're an actor playing a different role. So for instance, I would like to have the cat in all my stories. He might be a cat, normal cat one time. He might be another talking cat. He's a bad guy in another story of mine. And then Sonya would be back, but she would be playing a different role. Just because, I'm comfortable drawing these characters, and I love drawing them. But also I would introduce new characters in completely different situations. But that's an idea I'm playing with. And I think it'd be fun, because then there's a bit of familiarity to the new books or the new stories as well. If a lot of people really respond well to the cat, and I love that design too. So I would hate to just be like, oh, all done with that. Let's move on. especially if I have a cat in the next story, why not just use the same cat?
Well, I mean, you've created such a lush world here, and you probably have other worlds that you want to create. But at some point, and it doesn't even need to be remined, because I mean, to me, I just. I see Remind, and that title is really, tied into Vittles and his story and the Lizard Man and the brain transplants and that whole thing, right?
Yeah.
So telling a story in the, above water world, it doesn't necessarily have to be Remind. It, can be, completely different, in this world or any other kind of similar world, because just some of the tech that you create and the situations and all that, very cool stuff.
Thank you.
I see just the stuff that Sonya's creating in the lighthouse there.
Yeah,
it's like, wow.
Well, the thing about it is, I think all my stories are going to fit into that universe, because I really like stories where you don't know what's normal and what's not. It's relatable to you, to us, but seeing that lighthouse, you're like, what's that, what's going on, why is that lighthouse so weird, and just because there are cats that can stand up and start talking and people accept that, like, what else is gonna happen? It doesn't have to be a completely different world, it's just kind of an alternate universe in a way. And I really enjoy that type of story more than I think anything, where it's just, you just don't know what it is. It feels normal, but it's not,
Well, yeah. And like you said, I mean, you've created this world. You can tell completely different stories set in this framework that you're building.
Yeah. Yeah. And I even mentioned Cripple Peaks, the island, the town, in one of my old comics, which is completely old and really stupid. And I'm going to completely redo it one day, but I just like, it's kind of like this map I'm building, and each world just adds to the map a little bit and adds to the history a little bit.
I when I met you at WonderCon and I bought the book, because I was flipping through it, and it was fascinating, and then you gave me a t-shirt, and it's like, have you seen the Lizard Man? Like, what the heck is this? Then I read the book, and I was like, okay, there we go. Actually see people wandering around with these t-shirts on in the story and stuff, so
yeah,
so that was fun. So as we've been talking here, you've got you're up to $18,075. Someone else backed you for $75 in the last 10 minutes.
Very cool.
So we keep on going.
It's hard to be focused at work.
Just watching it tick up.
I'm checking my email, you know, like I have the iPhone so I can check the stats, you know, anytime I flip out my phone.
No, but it's a great thing. I love Kickstarter. I love that you're able to do, and other creators are able to, you know, connect directly with your fan base, and you're not having this is not a negative comment against, you know, Diamond or, you know, stores or anything like that, but, you know, you try to put something out into traditional comic shops, they're a great mechanism for what they're delivering, but, you know, as a creator, you have to convince Diamond to carry your book.
Yeah.
Shops have to decide that they want to take a chance on an independent book instead of buying, you know, Batman or, you know, Avengers or something like that. And you just have so many of these obstacles that are in between you and somebody picking up this book, and like I did, and saying, wow, this is fabulous, you know, because I had never heard of this before I met you at that convention, and being able to pick up this book and browse through it, you know, it's just like, wow, this is great. I want to get this. Now, had I seen it in a store, I would like to think I would have done the same thing, but, you know, just getting it into that store is so difficult. Now, you have a mechanism where you can get directly to your fans. You don't have anybody filtering, you know, the content, and even better, you know, people can try before they buy by going onto the blog and reading the pages and seeing what the work is and what you can do. And if they like it, you know, boom, you can buy the thing.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I have had a little luck getting into some stores, but it's mainly just been, you know, contacting these stores directly. And I heard somewhere online that if, as an independent, you get a personal connection, or, you know, a personal connection with like 30 different stores out there who will buy directly from you, you can almost do just as good as if you were distributed through Diamond, because, you know, if you're in Diamond, you're going to be in the back of the catalog. People are going to, they're going to have to take a chance on you. And, you know, especially if I have a book like mine that's $25, it's a big chance to take, a big risk, you know, in comparison to guaranteed sales with Marvel books and stuff. So, but I have a handful of guys that I can just email and say, hey, my next book's out, you know, I'll send you 10 copies and I'll send you a free preview copy if you want. And that's been great, because I just work out deals directly with them. I mean, it's a lot more work, you know, but it's been working. It's fine. And with Volume 1, somehow distributors started just sending me mail orders too, for like librarians and stuff. And so by the end of the print run, I was sending out like 25 to 45 books a week to either stores, distributors that were sending to librarians, or Amazon. And so it just, once it picked up, I was just doing business work. I mean, all I was doing when I came home was writing invoices, packing up books, and so that I can drop them off at the post office in the morning when I went to work. And that's why I chose to wait on reprinting the first volume, because it just got to the point where I wasn't in any work done on the second volume. So as soon as they ran out, I just told everyone they're out of stock. You got to wait.
Yeah.
And when I get the second book done, then you can get them. So it's not the smartest, I think, business move. I don't think publishers would go for that. But as far as an independent publisher, you know, I can do it however it works best for me. So
that's true. You're in charge, you know. So
yeah,
you know, do what you need to do.
Yeah. So it's been a huge learning experience. So I think this time around, my biggest goals are cracking the distribution model. And there's some small distributors locally that I want to try to get them to pick up the book, because then they'll have sales reps. They'll have, you know, they'll take over Amazon. They'll take over the warehousing, all that stuff. And then I don't have to worry about the business side of things as far as the reprints and stuff. There's always this factor that I want to be invested in, which is the first printing and selling directly to my customers with a limited print run. I think that's really important as a new creator right now, especially with this new structure with Kickstarter and the internet. But after the first printing, I want to tap into those old school distribution channels and still try to go that route.
You know, I love the fact that Kickstarter lets you follow other people, you know, so you can find people that have similar tastes or at least people that you know who are checking out a bunch of projects that are kind of up your alley. Maybe they're not all up your alley, but it doesn't hurt me to get an email that says, hey, you know, Kat Rocha is the, I was following her. She's done a book called Titanium Rain and also Utopiates. I follow her and she backed you. And then I got the email and it's like, hey, you know, Kat just backed Remind, you know, volume 2 plus, you know, box set or whatever. And I'm like, what? Remind volume 2. So, you know, I was right on that. And I got it, and then I told people about it, and you know, that's what you have to do with Kickstarter. You know, it's like you find something that you like, and you know, the forum for this show, comic book page, as well as other forums that I'm on, have now Kickstarter threads where people, when they see something that they like on Kickstarter, they go on that thread and they post about it and say, hey, here's something cool. You might want to check this out.
That's great.
And then, you know, pretty soon people are saying, oh, yeah, thanks for letting me know about that. And then, you know, they tell a friend and they tell a friend. And that's what gets the word out on these things. I think more and more of the fans now are also mobilizing so that when you have something like yours come out, you know, they come, if there's, especially if there's a presence, like you have a presence online with this because of volume one and because you've been doing the blog for so long that, you know, you have this built-in fan base. So once the fan base starts mobilizing itself, you know, it's like, that's why you see, you know, you've got such a great influx of pledges in the first couple of days of the campaign, which is great. You know, it just, you know, lets you know, it's like, hey, you've got people out there that are enjoying what you like. And it's going to help you get funded, and you know, then you're going to be on about your way. You'll be able to finish it up, you put out the book, and hopefully make some money for yourself, and you know, keep on doing great work.
Yeah. Kickstarter is just it's just blowing my mind, and you know, it's such a change for the whole industry. So, and I think people are really excited to, you know, like you're saying, they're mobilizing. The fans are mobilizing and saying, hey, you know, check out this, check out that. And I think it's because people are desperate for new content, new work, and unique work, you know, and so it's a perfect venue for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different things, too. I mean, it's like I back a lot of comics things, obviously, because I'm a big comic fan. But, I mean, you have people making cartoons, people making movies, documentaries, that's people great. Doing music, people, like, inventing some weird widget that does some kind of thing. You know, there's all kinds of stuff on Kickstarter, you know, that just...
Yeah, I back.
You could just,
I back
you know, lose a weekend, you know, just going and prowling around Kickstarter and all the really fascinating stuff that's out there.
Yep.
You probably go broke, too,
if you
are interested in too many things.
Yeah, I've backed everything across the board from games to books to, you know, electronics to it's great.
Yeah, my son, he backs all kinds of role-playing games and stuff. Okay. He loves that. And, you know, another one backs video games that are out there. I back comics and, you know, I know a couple other people that back music projects.
Yeah.
And it's all kinds of things.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time with me. If you're listening to this, check out the links that are in the show notes. Go out, check out remindblog.com. Also, check out the link to the Kickstarter. You can go to kickstarter.com and just type in Remind, R-E-M-I-N-D, and you'll get a short list of hits, and Remind Volume 2 and Box Set will be there. You can check it out. If you like what you see, click on it and pledge, and you'll get volume 1, volume 2, you know, whichever you want. There's a lot of options.
Yeah, please. It's the best work I've ever done. Yeah, thank you so much, Bob, for having me on the show.
Oh, and thank you for joining me. It's really fun. And now we're talking to Jeffrey Moy, who's got a Kickstarter for Enter the Video Game Gals. It's out there on Kickstarter right now as you're listening to this. Go out and check it out. Thanks for joining me, Jeff.
Hi, Bob. It's great to be here.
Let's talk about Jeffrey Moy's Video Game Gals.
Yes. Well, Video Game Gals is a creator-owned project that I came up with about 10 or 12 years ago. It's basically it takes place in a world where these rifts have been opening up, and these women are the only one that seem to have the capability to go into these rifts. Now, what's strange about these rifts is that they're based on a different type of video game each. So this kind of lends itself to having a lot of different stories and different scenarios going on. So what they also do is, so once they're into the rift, then they'll download the program type and whatever, and then they'll take on the characters. They'll become characters in the game where they'll have to play through the game, rescue people, fight the evil bad guy, or complete whatever goal they need to get out safely.
So very cool. So you've got this team of characters. You got Amber, Leona, Renee, and Corey. Let's talk a little bit about the process you went through in choosing the different types of characters you wanted to spotlight, and how you really just created their personalities and visual design.
Yeah, well, I mean, they really started out as just some kind of sexy pinups that I did based on some Japanese video games that I've seen before. So I thought, it's like, why don't I create something like that? And then from the pinup standpoint, then it just kind of started taking a shape, of different things that I've seen, like, Tron and Quantum Leap and Sliders. And then it just kind of clicked. It's like, hey, why not try something, create a story for them, where it's like, that's why they're called the Video Game Gals. Their design really kind of, the characters started to take place as they went along. They really kind of, it's like I said, okay, we need some different personality types where each one's, different and pretty distinct from each other. So Amber's pretty much like a very leader-like, it's personality types that everyone can kind of easily access. So Amber is the leader. Her best friend Renee is she's a little temperamental, hot-headed, kind of jumps in before really thinking things through. Leona is the smart, brainy one, and Corey is the quick reflexes. She kind of does things on the fly, and they all seem to work out.
Very cool. Now let's talk about the Kickstarter campaign itself. So you've gone with the crowdfunding concept here, where you're pitching this directly to the fans who, it is a comic, right? It's you're putting together an actual graphic novel with these characters. So this will appeal to comic fans, and it also appeal to video game, people who like video games, and even to some extent people who like role-playing games, I think. With the different kinds of situations you put these characters into. Now, there's a bunch of different levels that people can support this at, and they're able to get anything from the convention ash can. They can get the hardcover of the graphic novel. They can get PDF files. They can get sketchbooks, all kinds of things. Let's talk about how you structured the reward levels.
When you start your Kickstarter campaign, you really have to kind of think about what your monetary goal is going to be, and then you need to have your rewards kind of reflect that. Where mine is a pretty high goal, because right now I'm asking for $25,000, but the majority of that will go towards the printing of the book. And since it's a hardcover, larger than comic book size graphic novel, it's a more European style for a hardcover, and it's going to be 80 pages of the main story, and then it's going to have 8 pages of the primer story that I had in there, as well as some pinups and other things that I've done for it. So it's a pretty well-rounded book for the video game gals. But as you progress through the rewards, you start getting higher and higher, and then you start getting sketchbooks that actually pretty much detail the origin of the video game gals, since I've been coming out with these sketchbooks for years now, you know, and taking them to conventions. So I mean, if you don't know anything about me or the video game gals, you know, it's like when you donate, the more you donate, actually, the more books you'll get that actually have like all this video game gals content, as well as other work that I've done for comic books and video games. And so yeah, once you get all that, and then there's also sketch cards that you can get. There's original art at some of the higher levels from the graphic novels. There are commissions that I'll do for you, and you can even be the bad guy in the main story. I would have to redraw you in there, or I would have to redraw the bad guy as you if you decide to go that route. But that's a pretty steep pledge here of $5,000. Yeah, so if somebody really wants to be the bad guys and take on the video game gals, I'm just letting you know that you're going to get your butt kicked, but, you know, you'll be in the book. Yeah,
they'll be immortalized.
Pretty much so.
So if they do that, do they get, like, a page of original art or something with their character on it or something?
They'll get whatever page they would like that has their character on there as well.
Well, you know, it's pretty reasonable at the lower levels, even, you know, for getting a nice, larger, you know, oversized hardcover that you're talking about. It's $25, which, you know, you get the main story, you get the primer, you get the pinups, you get the postcard, ash can, you get a PDF also, you know, so that's a pretty good package for $25, because, you know, if I went to the store to buy a nice hardcover like that, that was an OGN from anybody, you know, it's going to cost in that same price range. And that's what I like about the way that you did your prize levels. You know, there's some Kickstarters, at least for me, as a, you know, person who supports different Kickstarter campaigns, I usually look at the prize levels and I, you know, kind of look at them and say, you know, is this like around what I would pay for it if I was going to go to the shop and order it, or just kind of like pre-order it? And that kind of puts me in, you know, it's like when someone does a regular comic and it's like $10 or something, I was like, ah, you know, $10 is a little steep for a regular comic. I kind of tend towards what you've chosen to do here, where you get the whole, you know, package, you get the whole OGN, and it's $25, because I buy graphic novels for $25. So, you know, that's a fair deal that you're putting there. And, you know, you throw in the PDF also, you got the extra materials that come along with it. You know, you propose a nice package. And I think that's the kind of thing. But it's getting the word out on these that's the trick, you know, as you find, because and that's what we'll try to help you do here, and, you know, publicize it on some forums also. And I know you were talking about it with people at Comic-Con as well. It's kind of hitting that magic level where people start hearing about it and start pledging, and it gets the ball rolling on these things. I've seen lots of Kickstarters that have ended, and, you know, it's like, wow, I wish I would have known about that one, because that's really cool. I would have pledged on it.
Yeah, there have been some that I've missed out on that, it's like, I was like, oh man, I should have been in on that. But yeah, again, it's really word of mouth that's where you'll start generating more people. The more eyes you have on it, you know, the more potential backers you'll have, you know. My Kickstarter has been going, it's been going on for a little while now, right before San Diego Comic-Con, which was a couple weeks ago. And it runs till August 19th. And the reason I did that was I kind of wanted the week after Chicago Comic-Con, because I'll be appearing there as well. So then it'll be expiring the week after. And so hopefully, you know, by then it's like I will have, you know, gotten the word out, and there'll be enough people that are starting to jump in. And I'm hoping that, you know, as we get closer to the campaign end, that, you know, it's like we'll really start to see a ramp up in support for the thing. And in order to do that, you know, it's like there's a, you know, I'm trying to think of more rewards that I can throw into some of the lower amount for the rewards, like producing a soft cover version of just the main story, and then having that out there for maybe $10 or $15. Because then that's, you know, that I think that would kind of put that a little bit more under price range. But, you know, like you said, it's like the $25 package is pretty much standard. That's what you would pay in a store.
Yeah, and I mean, you have to package that up and mail it out to people too.
Yeah, there's a lot of work that we'll still have to go into the book. Because right now where it stands is it still stands at I need to find someone to ink the book and to color the book as well, and that's where part of the funding will come in mm-hmm. too.
Yeah, you know, and Kickstarter and Amazon take a chunk off the top. You got taxes to pay on it. You know, you got to actually produce the book, and you've got to mail these things out. So, you know, people look and they say, wow, $25,000. But, you know, realistically, there's a lot of expenses that go into putting a package like this together. So, you know, if someone steps back and actually starts to think about all those different expenses, and I'm sure you thought about them, that's why you came up with, you know, your goal in the first place. But just so people know, you know, it's not like a number that gets pulled out of thin air. There, you know, we have to cover certain expenses to put together a nice package for people.
Right. I think some people maybe feel that it's like they shouldn't be paying for the artists or the artists or colorists or letterer that, you know, that produces that actually create the content for the book. There's been discussion about that, and you know, I understand that as well. And had I thought about it, I might have structured my reward system a little bit differently and maybe asked for a lower amount to start out with, because I think the thing about Kickstarter, it seems like people want to kind of see it grow into something. So if you start out with a lower amount, then as you hit your goal, and as you hit above your goal, then they see it kind of growing into, you know, oh, now you get the sketchbooks, and now it'll
right.
add more content, or, you know, it'll go.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know,
so
or even starting with a smaller size, and then when you go past a certain goal, it's like, okay, well, now I'm going to make it an oversized book and, you know, do these kinds of things.
Right. And I mean, I kind of had some, you know, I have some that are a couple ideas that I haven't put out there yet because, you know, really realistically, it's like I can't really put it out there unless I meet my goal. So,
right, right.
So, I mean, that's the thing too. So it's like if I start out probably a little smaller, you know, maybe the ball will, you know, continually grow. And then we'll have all this extra stuff. But now I'm thinking it's like, yeah, I just have to start throwing all the throwing some extra rewards out there, like prints and maybe ash cans or an artist edition or something like that.
Right, right.
Like, appeal to some people who actually, you know, maybe they like the art, you know, and the story is cool and everything, but you know, it's like, hey, I want to see more of the art, so. I think that would be something that could grab them as well.
Right, right. Very cool. Well, I think, again, if people want to check it out, you go one way, look at the show notes to this episode. We're going to have pointers to the whole thing. The other way you do it is you go to www.kickstarter.com. There's a search box there. You can type in Jeffrey Moy. You can type in Jeff Moy. I found it that way too. You can type in video game gals. Any of those searches is gonna pop you up to a link that you'll be able to click on. You'll see the Enter the Video Game Gals page. You'll be able to click on the little video Jeff put together. You'll be able to read through the presentation. You can look at all the awards. And if it looks cool, then what you do is you click on the fact that you want to back it. And then what happens is project gets funded. Jeff's able to finish it up, you know, pay the printing bills, pay for shipping the things out, and then it gets sent out and you get your very cool, for, you know, depending on the level of package that you pick, you get, you know, whatever it is that you've ordered. You know, I would be getting a hardcover, for instance, of this.
And I think that actually it's kind of important to actually let the listeners know that through Kickstarter gets your payments through PayPal, or not PayPal, but Amazon.com. So if you have an Amazon.com account, then it's really easy to become a backer. And just because you back something right away doesn't mean that your credit card is going to be charged right away. The only way that your credit card is charged is when the campaign ends and the funding goal has been met. If those two don't happen, then everything's a wash. Everyone just kind of walks away from it. Your credit cards aren't charged and I don't get funded, but then that means I need to work a little harder next time. So,
got our fingers crossed. You know, I mean, it's just, again, you hit that tipping point and people start giving you that word of mouth, and funding can come in pretty quickly.
I think definitely that's the trick there. It's getting the word out, you know. So if you take a look at the Video Game Gals page and you think it's a cool idea, you know, please link it on your social media, or, you know, you could tweet about it. I myself don't have a Twitter account, so I've been trying to do what I can through radio, through blogs and shows like this, and through Facebook as well, and trying to get, you know, everyone to know that it's out there. And I mean, there's 3 weeks left from now. There's 3 weeks left on the campaign, so, you know, hopefully in the next couple of weeks we'll see our funding go up dramatically.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for joining me, and again, Kickstarter.com, search for Video Game Gals or Jeff Moy, and consider backing Jeffrey Moy's Video Game Gals Kickstarter.
Thanks, Bob. I really appreciate it.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what we discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.